questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. A leader can't point to a vision of change and tell people, that's what it is. There's nothing to point to as it doesn't yet exist. Instead, leaders need to find the words that capture it in the way that helps others begin to see it. In this episode, Jonathan is challenged with identifying the three essential things that people need to know about his vision so he can begin to build their awareness of it. But there's even more to it, as he discovers. Please read the next card in Amplify, Jonathan.
What three things should they know about this? What are the three most important things they have to know and understand that will convince them that this change is necessary and in their interests? I feel I'm being invited here to step outside the vision for a second and look at it and explain it a little as one might write the back cover of a book to encourage somebody to read it.
Good. Yes.
You know,
yeah.
And where what you get there is either a summary, a very short summary, or reviews, what other people have said about it. But in some way, they're not the actual thing itself. They're not pieces of the book itself, the story. They're something else.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, yeah. Let's see where you go with
that. Yeah. If I stay on that level, let's work from there. We have to start somewhere. If we start from there, I would say, and this is also going back to the headline a little bit and starting from the headline, this vision is about a certain understanding of and a reckoning with what has gone wrong at the basic level. So not merely a statement, not merely a diagnosis of the homelessness and the isolation that we have talked about, but a desire to understand why, how did we get there. I think that's important because we can break with the past and move to new ground with a desire to forget and simply move on. We need to forget. It can be very human to forget. If I talk around the vision from the outside, if I'm walking around that sphere and trying to explain to somebody why it matters, why it's important, and what are the three things that they need to know about this, if I am standing outside it, this would be a starting point, I think we are breaking with the past. We were on the wrong path. We couldn't continue like this. There is intolerance here of that and the suffering that followed from that. And we need to understand why we had gone down the wrong path. So that's the first thing. The second thing I would say, and this is still standing outside the vision and talking about why it's important and I think why it works, it's also at its very core, the vision is an attempt to reconcile the private with the public. We've talked about that. So it's an attempt to reconcile the private with the public. Catherine, you talked about the terms of engagement, how we behave at home and how we behave in the street. So how we behave with our family and friends, but then how we behave with people we don't know, colleagues, new colleagues, but the strangers that we meet as we walk through life. So it's about reconciling the public and the private, but in a deeper sense, it's about reconciling the most private parts within us, so our own fractured, incomplete selves, which come into the world when we are born. Seeing the mirror image of that in our society, in the communities that we live in, and trying to find a way of living together, a way of seeing afresh, a way of living together in a community, which is in tune with our inner selves. So if people are going to feel at home in the community, they have to feel at home within themselves. And so the vision is really striving to find the principles, so the values. We start with the values, the principles, and ultimately a set of institutions, public institutions. We don't need to go further than that. We don't need to go into forms of governance, types of governments. But I think it's okay. I think it's okay at this stage to talk about public institutions, which allow us to live together, allow us to organize ourselves, allow us to solve problems, allow us to coordinate action together, to dispense justice, and so on. A community which is in tune with our inner selves. So that's the second thing. So the first thing is to say that this vision is not merely a break with the past, a rupture with the past, but an attempt to understand why we'd gone wrong. Why we took the wrong path.
Okay.
The second essential thing about it, the second essential thing that people need to know about this is that it's this attempt to find a way of organizing ourselves, creating a new way of living together, which is in tune with our inner selves, what it is. If our personal, intimate question might be, what does it mean to be human? I want that question to be a question that asks itself of the vision. I think the vision has a duty to respond to that question. What does it mean to be human today? The third thing is that it is a vision which is not prescriptive. It is a vision which is not giving people a model of how to live. It's not giving people a book, a manual of how to live. It doesn't even want to do that. It is in some ways a spirit, a new spirit. It is a new way of seeing the world and seeing our life together and how we can live better together. But it is not a prescription.
Or a formula.
No. So speaking here from the heart and without having had the time to consider this more deeply, those are the three things that come to mind. Yeah.
That they have to know.
Yes, that they have to know. And as I said, that's me a little bit looking to the back cover of a book and standing outside the thing itself and not going into it and saying too much about the content or the vision itself, but more talking outside it a little bit, talking to a person about the vision and saying, this is what you need to know about it. I'm not going to summarize it for you now. I'm not going to squeeze it into an elevator pitch. I'm not going to thrust a book into your hand because it's not written yet. But if I'm going to try and tell you why it matters, why it exists, why it has come now, and why I think you need to know about it, those would be certainly, I don't think the only things, but three that come to me very quickly now.
Okay.
So that's walking around it and standing outside it. If I were going to... encourage myself to go into the vision and what three things do they need to know about the vision, then we're back into, you know, the language and the spirit of the vision and trying to boil that down to three things. That would structurally, that would be easy for me now because I have the three, you know, it's talking about three things. I have three levels. There's the dignity and the freedom, the deep and loving respect of difference, our differences. And then in that third level, our need for each other. So that would give me a way of distilling the vision down into three things.
Okay, so wonderful. So the concept, the very question of three things stems from neuroscience.
Right.
In that our brains are programmed to remember three things. Our brains work in threes, okay? So if and when you start to impart your vision, express your vision, when people are listening, their brains will be able to hold three things at the end of that conversation, that communication. And strategically, if you can help them identify which three things to hold, then you have more governorship over what they remember. Mm. And it is what we remember that can shape how we think and act. Back to a collective. If this is a change you cannot realize by yourself, you need others, and you can connect with those others, express your vision, and express it in a way in the broader communications, the broader conversations, that they each and every one of them, ideal, leave that communication, that conversation, and think and act consistently because they've heard and remembered the same things. So just a little bit more on the neuroscience and key messaging, which is what I call it generally. So key messages, again, three. I taught, you know, media training, media preparedness for years, telling people what are your three key messages that you need to impart in the course of this media interview. And if you have an hour or 10 minutes, you fill it with a lot of words. So if in the course of that duration, you give them 26 different messages, A to Z, or Z in some people's case, and you really only need them or want them to remember A, B, C, you've now given them 26 options. You want them to remember three. You've increased the risk that they're going to come away with other things. And if they come away with other things, influences how they think and act, they're going to think and act differently. So the concept of three key messages is really critical to engaging and aligning a collective. If you give them one message and you repeat it throughout your conversation, throughout your communication, Jonathan, what do you think will happen? You've only said one thing.
I felt trying to write the headline under the previous question that what you could do with one line, one headline, so one piece of text, is you could maybe directly and indirectly through suggestion fit two, maybe three concepts, ideas into the line, into the headline.
That's a lot in one headline.
It is. But yeah. And that's where you're working very hard to look for the economy of language, where you know that certain words are loaded in a good sense, that they can, one word can do a lot of work. You know, we said the word time. Time seems such an innocent and not particularly useful word. It's very conceptual. But then, as you and I know, because of our mother tongue and our appreciation of language, if you just start a line with time too, yeah, we know that that immediately suggests urgency, yeah, that there's almost a command, yeah, that becomes implicit in that.
Like the word now that you yeah, used, right, today or today, yeah, we break yeah, with.
Time
so
to time.
I gave you the exercise of creating a headline for a reason, yes, really to encapsulate what your vision is, so that literally if you needed to reduce it to one sentence, that could be, I don't mean reduce literally, encompass, encapsulate.
Maybe certainly the spirit, 000, I think.
The spirit.
The yeah, spirit of it, yeah, yes.
Now, whenever we speak, so if you have one message to deliver and we know the brain is programmed for three, what happens?
You mean if you make the attempt to give one?
Yeah, you just keep repeating the same message, one, one, one. And people do that. They say one thing.
Yeah.
Different ways, but one thing.
Yeah.
So you listen, communication ends, you go away. What did he say? He said this one thing.
If I look at it from the perspective of my vision, that there is a flattening there. Something's going to fall mm-hmm, flat. Mm-hmm. And
there is an even bigger risk.
Yeah.
And yes, you're right, flattening. But if our brains are programmed for three and we hear one, our brains will fill in the other two.
Right.
And yeah, what if they contradict or are inconsistent some way, dilute, whatever. Now, you've lost an opportunity there and you've increased the risk that they will emerge different than any way in which they would support your meaningful change. So that happens if you give fewer than three messages to them, one or two. What about if you fill your communication with 26 different messages, four messages, 18 messages, then what happens? Because it's tempting, especially when you see your vision in so many, with such acuity and such detail.
Mm. I think overload, confusion.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to drop. Again, the brain will hold three.
Mm.
You give them 18 or 26 or 7 or 5 or 4, they will drop. And what if they drop the one you need or the three you need the most to remember? Now, I'm going to just extrapolate a little bit. Bear with me. If you think of a communication in terms of key messages, then those key messages should be the headlines of your communication. And if you think of this in a writer's sense, and anyone listening, we have all written, we were taught, most of us, all of us perhaps, at a young age, how to structure an essay, a piece of writing at its most rudimentary. Mm-hmm. Here's a paragraph, then you flow to the next paragraph, you flow to the following paragraph, right? So how do you, when those paragraphs represent different things, different aspects, there is something in each paragraph that stands out, and you lead the reader to the next. So if in the course of writing, each paragraph represents a headline, you have three, or a key message, if you use them interchangeably, you've got three to work with. So you want to make sure that as they listen, three things stand out. Because words are invisible when we are listening. And, you know, all of this applies to writing, of course, Jonathan, but I'm focused on the speaking. When we are listening, the words we're hearing are invisible to us. So we have to be able to hear them and translate them, see them, translate them, to grab out of the ether an idea, a construct. And it takes nanoseconds to do that, but first we have to hear it. So even in the course of a 10-minute communication, you are uttering and iterating potentially thousands of words. Now, what are the ones you want them to hear the most? If this were a written communication, you could underline. You could even enumerate, but underline and bold the things that need to stand out. How do you do that when you speak? So first you need to know, and this gets to the heart of this question, what three things should they know about this in order to think and act on it? In order to change their perception about, you know, as you said, things like dignity and freedom, and that we live in deep love and respect, even the fact that we have a need for each other. Whoa, where are they at with that right now? Is that going to be startling, new, different? All of these things can be hugely significant. If you know what your vision is intended, designed to change, which you do, what do they have to hear? What are the three things they need to hear most as you move them along the spectrum of change? Now, those things will change. They will change based on where they are in the spectrum. They'll change based on who's in the room with you or not in the room with you. It is both an art and a science discerning what at this moment in time, where they're at, where you at, where do those things intersect so that you can connect and move them to the next step onto that new ground. You have, as you have continued to do, stepped above and beyond the question on this. You have, in fact, if I look at my notes, you identified two sets of three things. And the one was from outside of the vision, and one was, the latter was inside the vision. So if we look at outside, what you said is, first they have to know why we took the wrong path. Okay, so there's a message there. Why did we? You have to answer that, not just pose it. The second is, you said the vision needs to reconcile the private and the public, and that we need to see a way of living together in a community that is in tune with ourselves. And then you added to that the principles, the values, the public institutions, identifying those further down the road that allow us to live together and coordinate action together. Then again, you repeated a community in tune with our inner selves, a way of living together. And then you landed on, what does it mean to be human today? That is what you would be answering in that second outside the vision statement.
Yes.
Thirdly, again, still outside the vision, you wanted to convey that the vision is not prescriptive. It's not giving people a model or a manual of how to live. You called it a new spirit, a new way of seeing the world, and knowing that we can live better together. And you reiterated it's not a prescription or a formula. So those were the three things you saw as quote statements. Mm-hmm. They need to know, looking at your vision from the outside.
Yes.
Okay. Then from the inside, you said those three things, and they seemed, the way you phrased them, to be more evident, more easily retrieved, because you've used the phrases, they're in your vision. So dignity and freedom, deep love and respect, our need for each other. Okay, so you have two categories. You've got the category of the outside the vision and inside the vision. Now I'm going to challenge you to identify the three key things they need to know and remember to act upon, think and act upon your vision. And I'm going to share with you a template on key messages, and we're going to pause here and see where you go from there.
Okay.
Okay. So you've just raised an important question, Jonathan, about the perspective, really, of these three things. And you've posed the example of a film. Are you taking the perspective of the director of the film, identifying the three key things so that people will go see the film? Or are you taking the perspective of the reviewer who has seen the film and is telling people, oh, go see it because it has this actor in it and it's a love story, whatever. Actually, this is a very different perspective entirely from those two things. This is about igniting meaningful change. And if you recall, we have spoken about this just very briefly, that this vision of yours, it begins with you. You embody it. You express it. But it moves beyond you as people start to think about it and choose to act on it. In this case, by embodying it themselves, as you are doing, and then in helping others hear it so they can embody it as well. So that together, individually and collectively, you, as you've said, you heal and you then work together, come together, step forward together into a new shared home. Okay. So it's in the something that doesn't exist yet. This is a new idea. It's a new initiative, doesn't exist. So your job is to get it out there, right? To reveal it to others. And as they hear it for the first time, envision that, whoever it is you're sharing it with, they hear it for the first time. Do you remember you said you want a reaction that is much more than, oh yeah, I get it. You don't want them just to say, yeah, right. Mm-hmm. What do you want them to do upon hearing it?
Feel something intense within them, not necessarily full agreement, because mm-hmm. also that seems unrealistic and mm-hmm. unnatural, but certainly an intense emotional reaction, mm-hmm. certainly a desire to hear more.
Yeah.
A feeling that I have at least located within them something that resonates, mm-hmm. whether that is that part of it, which is the diagnosis, mm-hmm. a sense of suffering and the different types of that, the homelessness, feeling uprooted, mm-hmm. the lack of purpose, mm-hmm. the disappearance of the public from mm-hmm. our lives, mm-hmm. so that we're okay. only left with the private.
Which, all of which is what you see that they may not yet.
Indeed.
Right. Let me share with you an example. Park that thought for a moment, because mm-hmm. we're talking about increments here. So a number of years ago, I was in a massive convention center in Toronto early one morning. There were 1,000 people in the ballroom, and we were all there to hear a great Canadian who at that time was a UN ambassador on the subject of AIDS. It was an initiative of women of people, not just women, who fund legal initiatives that bring greater equality to our society. Legal Education and Action Fund is what it was called. So when I walked in, I was at a table of 10. They were all round tables of 10 in this very gray, gray walls, gray carpet facility. And I was there to hear this speaker. His wife, who is a prominent Canadian journalist, was introducing him. And she was so wonderful, really eloquent, and brought the whole room to life. And then the speaker stepped forward. His name is Stephen Lewis. Like you, a master of language, great storyteller. So he started to speak about what was going on in South Africa vis-a-vis AIDS. And each story he told as he led us through his journey at that moment, the first year of his journey there, each story was more heartbreaking than the others. But poignantly, vividly told. And then he stopped, and the breakfast was over. And I felt it before I saw it, because my eyes were focused on the podium, on him. So I felt this shift. And I looked around then at my table mates, some of whom I knew, some I did not know. And their energy had plummeted. if they could have, their heads would have been on the table in defeat. Do you know why? He hadn't given them anything they could do about it. He hadn't helped them identify what they could do. And yet his role there would have been a win-win for him, for his organization, for the UN, for to say, you know, donate to the UN or call your member of parliament, whatever. There was no action that came out of it. So instead, painted this really bleak picture and they were devastated. Do you need to paint a big picture bleak? Absolutely. Sometimes you do. But the point of my telling you this is, as you were describing the key, you know, potential messages, yes, but remember this is about what do you say to them so they leave after first time they hear you or the 10th time they hear you, regardless of the context, they leave spurred on to do something about it. And that's another part. That's the unify messaging, but not so devastated. Your job is to help them move on to the new ground. So the key messages, they enable you to bring that vision to life, to actualize your vision with their help. And therefore, rather than, you know, their director role telling them what they're about to see or the review role explaining to them what they've just seen, key messages here are what, as you express your vision to whatever degree, what do you most need them to hear and remember that they can then act upon, think and act upon, so that your collective forms, because they get the meaning of it, but is going to remember, even remembering what it is. What is this? Does that make sense?
It does. It does. It at the moment it feels like a big jump, because what I've focused on in the vision is simply distilling the vision, and I haven't given so far, just in my own mind, any attention at all to the legs of the vision.
Yeah, this is where we're really jumping from illuminate your vision. You've amplified your vision. You've illuminated, amplified it. Now it's getting from the vision to, we're beginning to veer toward the action. And they have to be clear on what it is we're really in, what it is that matters to them. Why would they act? What is it that is meaningful enough for them?
Are we giving them a sense of why they need to act, or am I suggesting what they could actually do?
No, not the do. We're not at that level of action. Okay. That's okay. Unify.
Okay.
This is, what do they need to know about it that makes it meaningful to them? And what do they need to know? Again, the challenge is the three things because of how their brains operate. The three. So in vision now, they're listening to you. Those things have been clear by how you've structured and the headlines of your communication. You have ensured that certain phrases, statements, messages stand out from everything else. You do that through your verbiage. You do it through repeating. There are a whole bunch of techniques that we'll get to. But this is about them emerging, hearing the same things, as a collective hearing the same things in preparation for what they can do about it. So that when they leave that communication, when it ends, they step outside and someone says, oh, you went to hear Jonathan Hill. What did he have to say? And someone 10 feet away says, oh, I hear, I couldn't get in. What did he have to say? And then they go back to their worlds, their families, their offices, their workplaces, and say, oh, I just heard the most amazing thing the other night. I heard this guy named Jonathan Hill. Oh, what did he have to say? And now you begin to create ambassadors for it, because they're all reflecting the truth of what you've said, of what your vision is. and they're starting to carry it for you. It starts to cascade.
Okay, so I'm sort of moving forward here, still at this stage conceptually. So that my first two, as you said, the sets of three, they were different ways of distilling, bringing the complexity and the volume of the vision into something smaller that you could, that you can get your hands around.
Yeah.
As you said, the film director's view is to give hints, small tastes, bits of the thing itself, aspects of the vision that suggest what it's about, and where you, by doing that, you're piquing the interest of the watcher. So the watcher's already imagining the film. Then the reviewer is taking a different view at a certain remove from the film and explaining in a more academic way, this film is important because it does X, Y, Z. And a reviewer might not say much about the film because she doesn't want to spoil it, but her job is in somehow to explain why the film is important in its current context. So the reviewer is talking from outside the film. The film director is giving you a glimpse from inside the film. It could be a great scene, a piece of dialogue. So there is that. What I'm moving towards now, and now I'm thinking more about the audience here. It strikes me that if there is something that they need to know, the things that they need to know that will ultimately lead them to action, so actually doing something. I'm looking again at the card. If this is about what they need to know and understand that will convince them that this change is necessary and in their interest.
To act upon is implied in that.
Yeah. It seems to me that there has to be something here that communicates urgency. The now. Because if there isn't the now, if there isn't a sense of urgency, people can love an idea or a message, but walk away and say, well, yeah, that's great, but I'll do it maybe sometime in the future. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It might be compelling, but there's no sense of now. So something tells me here that part of the vision, which is very much about standing on new ground, but which is also about the intolerance of what has gone on before, is that needs to be communicated as a sense of urgency. So people need to hear, we could not continue as things are now. It could not continue. There is a moment now of change. There has to be. Then there has to be a sense that this vision is not prescriptive, but it is open to them. There is place for them. Well, obviously there is room and place for them within the strategy, but it's more than that. The vision invites them into it. There has to be a sense of inclusion here where they feel I can be part of this.
So an invitation.
There is an invitation. There is room for me here. Mm-hmm. There is a place here within the vision where I belong. Because this is a vision that is not targeting a particular group of people.
Is there room for all of them?
Well, this is the challenge. Inevitably, naturally, there will be many people who, for whatever reason, cannot become part of this, who don't want to support it, who are repelled by it. We've accepted that.
You're not speaking to them?
No. But equally, within the people who would support it, with whom it would resonate, there will be differences. If the vision is about diversity, the audience, the positive audience, the supportive audience will be diverse. So there has to be a clear sense that there are ways for them to support this vision.
Do they care about that? The ways, because now you're already asking them to support it. You don't have them on side yet. They're hearing it for the first time. They didn't even know it was possible. I know you want to get to inclusion, you belong. That's different than there are ways for you to support it. First, you have to get them on side before they will act.
Mm.
And how can they come on side if they don't even know it exists? They're living in a state. It hasn't been a possibility. And now you step forth with this big vision.
Right.
Is there a message, an initial key message of reassurance? And the reassurance, of course, when you say you belong, there's a place for you, there's a home for you. You said we can't continue. The moment of change is now. So by saying that and maybe embellishing that differently, right?
They need to know that this is now.
Yeah, but their now is different. Today we break with the past is part of the communication, right? In your vision.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I would need to communicate to them.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I'm just looking at another way to say that or to support it. Because if you say today we break with the past, what is the past to them? Is there anything? So the corollary of that, the assumption there is the past wasn't good. It wasn't good for you or any of us.
Well, no, that's what I mean about diversity. I want my vision to be open to people who are having a great life.
Okay, so okay. Why break with the past then?
Right.
Why should they break with
right.
the past?
Right.
Why?
Well, but this is why in the second part I talked about inclusion. Because the vision is not aiming at one type of person. And that it wouldn't
resonate. No, exactly. But what is the past? Jonathan, what is the past? Because there's a lot that's past. What past? And what is it you're asking them to break with? What wasn't working that needs to change? What isn't good enough in the past? We break with it.
Right.
And as you just said.
Well, you're suggesting we should go with the film director's view and take three bits of the film. So we need to get the bit of the film that shows how the past was intolerable. So we have a piece of dialogue or a scene which shows how the past was intolerable so they can see that.
Or remind them of it. You know, you are a visionary, so I get now why you're going to the film version. I get that. But you said just a moment ago that back to inclusion, inclusiveness. There are some that the past served very well. So even if you go to intolerable, why? Like, what was it that you see the need? Why is it you see the need to break with the past and move on to new ground? That's such a powerful declaration, but what's beneath it? So that you're giving them another level of insight to it. If today we break with the past is the headline over a paragraph, what's in the paragraph that grounds that, gets to why that has to be? And there can be one statement that grounds it. If and only if, it's essential that they know this in order to move forward, to hear you and move forward.
Mm.
This is the heavy lifting of your leadership. Just talk it out with us, if you would. Why break with the past?
Well, because of the suffering.
Mm. But I'm not suffering. I thrived in the past. And you want me to be in the shared home? I was thriving. So suffering, yes. How did the suffering affect me when I'm thriving? Or are you only speaking to those with whom or for whom a break with the past because of the suffering is what they need to do to restore and renew?
No, because that's the difference between resistance and vision.
Yeah. And also back to your inclusiveness, all of you living together, all the different paths. So are we breaking with the past, no matter what that past was for each and every one of you? We're breaking it and standing together on new ground today. Because the past did not serve us all, did not allow us, each of us, to be our true selves. The past created so much dissension and misery. Is there any member of the audience, any members who are actually truly at home within themselves, even if they've been thriving? I know a lot of successful people who live in beautiful homes. Are they at home within themselves? Not always. Being in tune with our inner selves.
I'm struggling to see if there are ways of talking about the vision other than compressing it down into three key messages.
No, no, no. So this does not replace you speaking, you know, delivering speeches about your vision. These are the things they need to know about your vision. The
right.
essence of your vision for them.
Right.
So they can ground it in themselves. Because they won't be able to repeat what you've said to themselves. Right?
So, for example, is one key message, possibly, we must have deep and loving respect for our differences. Could that be?
It absolutely could be.
No, but no.
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 Just walk into one.
No, you're telling me that's not it. Let me say again. What the film director does is he says, I'm going to give you three bits of my film. I can't give you all of it because I've been told to give you three bits. You know, I'd want you to sit down for 2 hours, but I've been told I can mention three things. So I'm going to give you three parts of the film. A bit of dialogue, a scene, maybe a piece of music that will get you to see it. So that's going into the vision and pulling out three things.
That's not this at all, Jonathan. Not at all.
Right, so it's not that.
No.
Equally, it's not the reviewer's view, which says, in the beginning of the 21st century, people were feeling homelessness. Economic models had failed, people were feeling disconnected, and therefore, you know, so it's not the reviewer's view, which is looking at the moment in time and space, the social and political and cultural context in which the vision arrives, and so who describes the vision from the outside. It's not that either. And then the third attempt I've tried to make is being with the people in the room and thinking what they need to go away with, which is one, urgency, now. This is not an academic, if it were a speech, let's just assume for the sake of argument, this is not an academic, there is a sense of urgency here. There is a sense that this concerns me. That's where I talked about inclusion. If I've understood correctly, it's not about giving people an activist's pack of things that they have to do and stickers and T-shirts and things to stuff through other people's mailboxes. So it's, but there would have to be a promise, a sense that there is a way forward. So why did I split it into those things? Because there has to be, in any audience, there has to be a sense of urgency. This is now. So, and part of that is we couldn't continue. We couldn't carry on as we were, so there's a sense of now. The inclusion is there is something for all of us here.
Good.
There is something for all of us here. I'm not defending a particular interest. I'm not defending a particular group of people. I'm not defending a particular country or a particular town. I'm not defending a particular class or income group. It is a vision which wants to speak to everybody. Many will not listen, but it's a vision that wants to speak to many. So that's the inclusiveness. And then the promise, the way forward, is this is not just a diagnosis and an attractive, hopefully attractive picture of how the world might be. There is a call for action here. There is a way forward. So those are three ways for me to look at the thing from different perspectives. The third one, very much focused on the audience here.
Which so what, is what the collective. They,
yes.
Which is your collective.
Right.
Right. Okay.
I'm so, struggling to see what a fourth would look like.
No, you don't want a fourth. You don't want a fourth. So let me say, and you may have them, that may be it for you. I don't want to go back into the film director, but I will if I have to, but I really don't want to do that because I think that's taking you away. Let me go back to what you've just surfaced. Sense of urgency, feeling that they belong, this is inclusive, and that there is a way forward, a promise of a way forward.
Yes.
Okay. If after listening to you, that is what they hear, those three things, have you done your job in beginning to engage and ignite the collective that will help you ignite your change? Is that what they need to know about your meaningful change? That there's a sense of urgency, that they belong, and that there's a way forward? Does that capture your vision of change, of what that change is? Are those the three most essential things you need them to know, they need to know about your vision of change? And that by virtue of those three things, they're going to start speaking about it to others, and they're going to want to come back and hear you again. Or right there on that very spot, as Catherine described, come up to you and say, how can I help? Sense of urgency. They belong. There's something more inclusive than what exists. There's a way forward, you promise.
Mm. Well, I'm not sure I can. Well, I could try to distill the vision itself into three things. So starting from the vision itself, but then we're just in the same exercise of summarizing without losing the energy and the force of the vision.
If you want them to hear your vision and then ultimately act upon it to help you realize it individually, collectively, they have to be able to hear your vision. What are the essential things? And yes, you will express it. You can deliver that speech, the beginning of the speech, embellish the speech. It could be the most magnificent speech. What is the essence of it? They can't remember the whole speech. What is the essence of it? So let's go back to Martin Luther King for a moment. He was given 7 minutes, by the way, about 7 minutes to speak that day. He ignored that, and he delivered a speech that he actually drew from someone else. His I Have a Dream came from another woman. He heard her speak, and then he took that and embellished it. But what do we remember? Do we remember all the words of that magnificent vision? What's the essence of it? What is the essence? Just as you've just said, go there. What is the essence? Distill your vision into its essence for them, so they can carry it forward. I'm going to pause here and jump to another question, Jonathan, because mm-hmm. I think another one might help you elucidate this a little more. We can come back to it, mm-hmm. or the next question might just bring it all home for you. Shall we try that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This was a challenging conversation. For the first time on this, his 38th Illumify Game Changer question, Jonathan couldn't complete his answer. When I explained the reason for identifying the three essentials of his vision and framed them as his key messages, I know he got it. He's familiar with neuroscience's discoveries on how our brains are programmed to remember in threes. Yet he kept reverting to the film metaphor, identifying them through the perspectives of film director, critic, and viewing audience. I was hopeful he'd get close enough using the audience perspective, but what emerged bore only vague resemblance to the essence of his vision. This question was meant to identify what his future audience needs to hear and remember about his vision. they have no awareness of it just yet. So what do they need to at least initially hear in order to be willing to share and act upon it? We'll get there, I promise. The Leader's Journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the Leader's Journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.